Join the live studio conversation on Cape Talk.
Now, they say an actor should never work with animals or children because they are bound to be upstaged. Last night at the premiere of the new movie Beast, South African-born actor Charlotte Copley held his own against both, even if the animals were largely computer-generated. But what a joy to see a major international production shot in South Africa, set in South Africa, showcasing South Africa, using South African crew and supporting cast, not to mention giving a major role to one of our own local favourites. And he is with me in studio to talk about that movie, to talk about his career for the full first hour of the show today, and to talk about the incredible journey that it has taken to follow his dream of working in film. Once again, a welcome to the studio audience members who've joined us live at the studios today. I hope you will join the conversation. Just remember to wave a hand if you've got a question. And to those listening to us on YouTube, on Twitter, wherever it may be, just remember you are always welcome to phone in on 021-446-0567 and to leave a voice note on 072-567-1567. Before we say hello to Charlotte, let's just give you a little taste of what is on offer with the movie.
From Universal Pictures.
I've never seen anything like this. Multiple attacks without eating its prey.
On August 19th, Idris Elba.
Just breathe.
I'm getting my girls out of here.
It'll be you versus him. And that is not a fight that you are designed to win.
If we stay together, we're not gonna make it, all right?
Dad, please be careful.
Come and get me!
Beast. Rated R. Under 17, not admitted without parent. Only in theaters August 19th.
On theaters in South Africa today, August the 12th, and with me in studio, Charlotte Copley, one of the stars of the show. Congratulations on the movie. It was so much fun, and welcome to Cape Talk.
Thanks very much, Papa. It's great to be here.
Before we talk about Beast, and we're going to spend a lot of time talking about Beast, can we just share a little bit of the early Charlotte Copley story? I heard your brother Donovan at the premiere last night mentioning the fact that you were obsessed with visual storytelling from a very young age. Can you sort of pinpoint where it began?
Yeah, I can. I was living in Grahamstown in the Eastern Cape, and I started watching TV sort of later on in life because TV only came into South Africa in 1976, yep. And my parents were quite conservative about letting me watch stuff. And all my friends could watch The Lone Ranger at school, but I wasn't allowed. So I used to take a tape recorder and then record the sound of The Lone Ranger, and then my mom could see that I wasn't in the room, but the TV was playing, but I wasn't there, and then I could listen to The Lone Ranger. Wow. And then at school the next day I could talk about the episode. So I think from then,
that's extreme.
And I must have been about 9. Yeah, just the idea of storytelling was interesting, and then wanting the visuals with it. It started with audio. I used to listen to audio cassette reading, books, audio books, basically. And then just got super interested as I was allowed to watch TV.
Finally, The things our parents do the things they create by what they withhold from us. Look where it ended up getting you.
Yeah, and of course, and then they supported me massively as soon as they knew I wanted to do it from when I was about 10. They just helped me in any way they could, which was super helpful.
That's amazing.
It's great to have supportive parents. Otherwise, it's a bit more of an uphill battle.
Well, I mean, it's an uphill battle full stop to break into this industry for
it
anybody.
Is. Yeah. And even when you're in, let me tell you, it continues to remain a battle to stay in it.
Really?
Yeah, definitely.
Sure. I mean, you say that after how many years in Hollywood?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, still.
Oh, for sure. Oh, no, I've spoken to the biggest stars in the world. I'm like, do you feel safe in this? Do you feel like when did you know you were fine? And just every single one will go like, it feels like it can just disappear tomorrow.
Wow.
You know, and realistically it won't in tomorrow, but you know, maybe 3 bad movies or 2 or 3 bad movies or just a new person comes along
and your star has waned.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, then along comes COVID and stops everybody for an extended period. I mean, did COVID impact the screening, the filming of this movie?
It impacted the filming for sure. We had to do the COVID protocols and everything, but we were in shooting at this incredible private game reserve. And Baobab, it's actually called Baobab Private Nature Reserve up in Limpopo. And so we were very isolated. So COVID didn't have as much of a threat to us, but we still had to go through all the protocols and spend millions of dollars doing it.
Sure. Okay, we're going to come back to that filming in a little while. I mean, a lot of kids share that dream of working in the movies one day, be it in front of the camera or behind the camera. Very few of them, though, make it to the level you've made it to starring in actual Oscar-nominated films in some cases. I mean, everybody likes to tell your story from the moment that District 9 explodes. But what about the years in between? You've said from 10, you knew this was what you wanted to do. Your parents could see it was what you wanted to do and supported you. Where did the path take you from there? Because my understanding is initially you were working behind the camera.
That's right. When I was in school, I mean, I would have, if there'd been a YouTube at that time, I would have been one of those people just making like a gazillion YouTube videos of anything I could. I would make, I would write plays, I would perform in plays, I would make short little films. I recreated a whole episode of Fawlty Towers with my friends in high school and shot it at home in my parents' house and took over the house. I was just constantly making stuff, putting it in front of people as well, putting... I realized later on in my career that a very useful part for me had been that I'd made a lot of stuff and put it in front of my schoolmates.
Yeah.
So either I was on stage or I was making videos. And, you know, if you've got like 600 people in a school watching what you do, your parents might think you're amazing and all your friends are like, you're very talented. You're going to be amazing one day. And they have to. And they have to tell you, have to tell your kids that, even if they're very mediocre. But your school friends won't, you know, or the school mates will just be like, yeah, you should not, you know, you'll know that your friends do not think you're cool or funny or interesting. And so it was kind of a proving ground for me to sort of get the instinct that I realized years later when I started acting again that I had an instinct for wanting to make a character more entertaining. And I think it had something to do with seeing those live reactions from my schoolmates back in the day.
Oh. And then, of course, fast forward to one of those former schoolmates, Neil Blomkamp. I know a bit younger than you, but coming along and asking for your help with access to camera equipment. And there begins a working relationship that leads to him coming to you and saying, well, I want to make this film about xenophobia and forced removals, except they're going to be aliens as the refugees. And District 9 was born. And he comes to you and says, I want you to be in my film. Now, you've been working behind the camera, producing films, shooting short films, etc. You haven't acted in years.
Yes.
Did you say yes immediately? Did you know this was just something you had to do?
I did at that time, yes. I mean, so my career path was basically I was meant to go and study directing, and I actually decided in high school, I was like, acting is too much of a lottery ticket.
Okay.
I have no control over what happens there. So I didn't want to do that. I wanted to direct. So I was going to go to UCLA, study and direct. And then this idea, the government had just changed, and the idea to start a TV channel came up. So I actually formed a company with the current chief exec of Prime Media, the owner of Cape Talk, Jonathan Proctor. And we, working together with a couple other partners, we ended up as founding ETV, which we then lost a couple months later. And the dreams we had around what we were going to do for the whole industry around ETV ended up in a big, you know, dispute with shareholders and that sort of thing. So I kind of had a lot of ups and downs in the early part of my career. Then went on and was at the time of District 9, I'd had a production company, talent agency, and a visual effects company with a partner here for years, a business partner that I'd had for like 14 years. And I was looking for something different, and I'd left those companies, and then I wasn't sure what I was going to do with my life. And then the District 9 opportunity came, and it came by accident. Neil didn't just ask me one day. We had done a whole bunch of short little tests for this movie that he was working on that I was going to produce.
Yeah.
And only right at the end in the process, based on Peter Jackson having seen my little mess around performances that I'd been doing just as tests for the actor who was going to do it, that they were going to get from Hollywood.
Oh,
and then
right.
Peter Jackson said, you know, allowed Neil to cost me in the film, which is a ridiculously miraculous series of circumstances.
I mean, I'm aware of the fact that we've got a bunch of film students with us who are at the beginning of their careers and dreaming of these kind of things happening to them one day, and just what that says about taking every opportunity that comes your way, no matter how obscure it might seem. You never know when it's going to be the one that gets a Peter Jackson seeing you and saying, that's Vickers right there.
Absolutely.
Oh, amazing. I mean, that film, you know, 35 years old, you're improvising most of the dialogue. You thought you were going to be producing it. You ended up starring in it. Did you have a sense while you were making District 9 of how it was going to do and where it was going to go? Did you have any inkling that it was going to blow up into the hit it did?
I mean, I always had a great faith in Neil Blomkamp, you know, since he'd come on. And I, at that time, believed in him very strongly.
Yeah.
And when we were making it, I mean, I would... I would be lying if I said that I thought when I was making stuff, when we were all making stuff together, we were just trying to make stuff that looked like, you know, like Tony Scott, who did the first Top Gun, like everything that's very cool and, you know, looks expensive. We were just trying to make our stuff not look cheap and South African. It was like, how do we get it to not look South African? And then when Neil went over there, he was like, dude, everybody now can make that stuff like cheaply. Everyone knows how to make it look good.
Yeah.
People are not used to seeing townships. They're not used to seeing the kind of visual stuff that we have in South Africa. So he went backwards and was like, I'm going to shoot this like a sort of a bad corporate video and then put the aliens in and the high-end CG. It's just like an interesting visual idea. That was his sort of into the idea.
And look where it ended up. I mean, that movie opened doors for you and Hollywood came knocking, rolling out the red carpet. You get the phone call to say we want you in the A-Team movie remake. And I've already had a listener asking a question, please, about what it was like to play a character that people loved so much in its original form. I mean, Howling Mad Murdoch, an absolutely iconic character for those of us who grew up in the 1980s. Did you have any trepidation taking on the role because of that sort of attachment to the original?
I didn't, actually. It was just something that resonated with me very deeply. It was my favorite show as a kid. Murdoch was my favorite character. And just, it's interesting you say that thing about like Hollywood was rolling out the red carpet. It's never that easy. Like, it's always the behind the scenes. It's like, I actually got that role. I was promoting District 9. I heard about this opportunity. I was like, I know this Murdoch character. So I did a series of auditions in my hotel room where I basically improvised various accents and stuff just as Murdoch, as I remembered him, and did little sketches. Like, again, they would have been like YouTube comedy sketches, you know. And I sent those in, and that's how I got the role firstly. And then so it was effort. And then still the head of the studio at the time was concerned the version of Murdoch that they'd written in the script had no accent changes. It wasn't like the original Murdoch. They'd sort of updated him to be like crazy cool, you know, more like a Woody Harrelson kind of vibe.
Yeah.
You know, that's what there was no accent changes. There was no crazy stuff. And so there was much debate internally about whether or not this guy playing it the same way that Dwight Schultz had done was a good thing, you know, with the senior brass at the studio. All the filmmakers wanted it. So there's always a battle. But I just super resonated with the character, so I never felt uncomfortable with it. My greatest moment was in that whole process for me personally was Dwight Schultz came, saw that tape that I had made. He was the guy who played the original. And I couldn't see his face while I was watching. And when he turned to me after watching, he had tears in his eyes. And he just gave me a hug and he said, "You are Murdoch." And he said, "Thank you."
Goosebumps.
Yeah, it was a very special moment for me, you know.
Amazing. Just for those who might have joined us late to the conversation, our guest in studio, Sholto Copley, whose new movie Beast with Idris Elba opens on circuit today. We're going to be talking a lot about Beast in the second half hour of this conversation. But for now, you are welcome to carry on doing what several listeners have done, sending SMSs, sending WhatsApps, asking questions of your own about his career, about the new film, about the old ones, telling him which ones you've loved, what you thought of District 9, whatever it is that is on your mind this afternoon. Please do join the conversation on 021-446-0567 or with a voice note to 072-567-1567. Sholto, you know you've made it big in South Africa when a project that you're involved in is put into the matric curriculum. And I don't know if you're aware of the fact that the matrics this year are studying Elysium as part of their AP English course. My daughter's one of them. She says hello. I've quite enjoyed doing homework with her. I mean, science fiction, an over-the-top South African villain, Jodie Foster and Matt Damon as your co-stars. Was that just a dream job? Or, I mean, it was really a physical pounding by the looks of things as well. What was that experience like for you?
That was pretty crazy, but I'm just remembering that District 9 was also in the matric curriculum at one point. So that's all on
your
Neil.
Canon.
That's Crail. That's all Neil's like insightful sci-fi. Elysium was amazing because I got to sort of, that was the first time I did a villain, and I don't like playing villains, but that was one that was fun. Because it wasn't totally serious, you know. I got to sing Jan Pirovit in a huge $110 million movie, and I just still to this day I can't believe that we actually got away with putting that in a movie.
I know.
and sort of channel all the South African tough guy sort of stuff that I'd grown up sort of seeing, or the, you know, and the generation before I certainly had, and just kind of had some fun with it. The actual, you know, we actually, I had such fun with that character that in the early edits of it, he was sort of too charming and they had to edit back some of the stuff because he was too funny. It was almost like Bucky Spurta and those guys when they're in the fight in the scrum, you know, yeah. And they're laughing when the guys are fighting. It's kind of entertaining to watch because they find it sort of amusing, you know, and Bucky's just blowing kisses to the other guys, you know. It was that kind of strange South African charisma around violence that I was kind of sort of trying to tap into with him.
Okay, Keith is asking on the WhatsApp line, is your Afrikaans any good still, even though you're out of South Africa so much these days?
Man, ek dink my Afrikaans is nogal goed. Ek praat baie Afrikaans daai kant. Jy weet, ek het ook 'n radiostem, Keith. Hier's my radiostem wat ek nou gebruik. Jy weet, ek praat so 'n bietjie in my radiostem vir jou, Keith.
Baie dankie, Keith. Geniet die dag.
Okay,
and then on the SMS line, we have Catherine asking, what advice you've got for young actors who want a career in Hollywood?
You have to keep making stuff. You can't rely on somebody spotting you and making you famous and, you know, all of that sort of thing. And it's really a brutal job. No one really talks about that side of it. You know, I've seen it destroy people's lives, and sort of the more successful you are at it, the more it can destroy your life. It's not for the faint-hearted. It really is something to only do if you're really impelled to do it, because the glory side of it is only one side. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very difficult to sustain your family life, your stability as a person when you keep playing these different roles and going into things. It's a strange one. It's tough, even when you succeed. Yeah. But make stuff. People got to see what you can do.
Yeah. And of course, it's easier than ever to do that and to
to
get it out there. As you said, anybody with a cell phone can make a TikTok video and get it out there. But working the room to make sure that video gets seen and shared and seen and shared again is a different story. I mean, you mentioned the impact on family life. You are a family man now.
Yes.
I mean, how has your career changed or your career priorities changed because of that?
Yeah, I mean, I was used to just being able to, you know, travel around or do anything. Now I have a 5-year-old daughter, and in the beginning we could travel around and take her with us, but as she gets more and more set into school, for example, you still start to think like, is this a good idea?
Yeah.
And unfortunately our business just goes from one place to the next. I mean, you're just never in the same place shooting. It's very seldom that, you know, some people will land a gig doing one show in one country for 10 years, you know, as a TV show or something. But most of the time, especially the more successful you are, the more you're traveling around as well if you're doing different projects.
So you're on the road a lot, but then, of course, again, COVID forces you to stay in one place. Were you able to spend it in one place, and where was that place?
This is definitely Cape Town. It's still my favorite city in the world. Yeah.
Of all the places you had to be locked down, I'm glad it was here and that you didn't get stuck
halfway
around the world, separated from the family.
No.
We are talking to Sholto Copley, and after the news break, we're going to focus more on the new movie Beast, which releases in cinemas now. Several questions coming in about that film. Just a reminder that you're also welcome to ask more background generic questions about Sholto's career path to this point. Advice, anyone in the room who wants to ask a question, we have got our first hand up from one of our students. Let's get you up to a microphone over here, if we may. And won't you just tell us your name and then ask your question? Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, my name's Avital. It's lovely to meet you both. I was wondering if you could tell us if there's a tangible difference between working in Hollywood and working locally in South Africa, and maybe which one you prefer, if that won't get you in trouble.
Great question.
No, there isn't a tangible difference, and I prefer working here.
Simply because it's home, or?
Simply because it's home, and the South African crews I actually prefer. The South African crews have a very kind of, literally like boer makaplan kind of attitude. You don't have the unions here, so people are more able to sort of cross over and work in, you know, are multi-skilled.
Yeah.
People work on low budget and big budget stuff here, so they tend to want to solve problems more effectively. Our crews are truly, truly special and world class here.
Amazing to hear that. We'll talk about the role they played in the movie Beast, which opens on circuit.
Cape Talk.
Cape Talk.
Bringing you all the conversation
in front of our live studio audience.
Our live studio audience are here to see and hear from the man of the moment, Sholto Copley, South African-born actor who is on circuit as of today in the new movie Beast, which had its South African premiere last night, releasing on circuit today. Not often that a major studio like Universal Pictures has a full-on red carpet premiere in Cape Town. Sholto, I mean, what was it like for you to be on home soil being part of an event like that here in Cape Town?
Yeah, it's very special. You're right. I mean, it hardly ever happens here. And the only other time we did it was District 9, actually, yeah, sort of a decade ago. So it's a rare thing. It's a rare sort of opportunity. And it's very special to me that this is a project that features, you know, South African landscapes. I suppose I'm trying to make up for what we did in District 9, showing the sort of ugly side visually of South Africa. Now we're like, look how pretty it is. You can come 10 years later. It's like, actually, it's a very pretty place. Please come. Wildlife preservation, poaching issues, these are things that were like personal to me as well. Getting to play him as a South African character. Originally, when I came on board, this game ranger that I play, sort of lion expert, mm-hmm, that they told me at the time was based on Kevin Richardson, the lion whisperer, South African, just incredible man working with lions here for the last while. But he was written as a British character. I think they were going to try and get like a British tax incentive or something.
Okay.
So I literally came on and there was a version that would have been like, you know, yeah, Idris, here's the big male lion. Yeah, mate. There's the female doing the hunting. That was going to be Martin Battles, my guy's name. And, you know, and then it was set in somewhere North Africa. And so then when I came on board, you know, and just chatting with Baltazar, the director, and he did Everest, which I loved. And so Bolt was one reason I wanted to do the movie. It sort of became obvious. I was like, can't I just be like South African, dude? It's like, we do lions. Like, that's what we do. Like, look at Kevin Richardson. There's no one even close to this guy.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it just was, they realized, okay. And I think something changed somewhere in the hierarchy of the tax incentive issue.
And then we
managed to set it in South Africa and play the character South African, which is great.
Okay, so just for those who don't know anything about this film, let me give you the very, very brief cliff notes that the film tells the story of Nate, who is a doctor from New York, brings his daughters out to South Africa following the death of their mother because he wants to show them the rural village that she grew up in and to introduce them to the wildlife and the beauty of our countryside. And the wildlife proves to be a little wilder than they were expecting. I don't want to give too much away, but I think everybody knows this is a sort of a survival flick. It's a family that finds itself in crisis, fighting to stay alive with Nate's old friend Martin, played by Sholto, playing a huge role in that. Okay, so you said the chance to work with the director was one of the key things that drew you to the film. Yes. What else got you on board?
Idris, and also the idea of that I was going to get to be in the bush. I love being in the bush, felt any excuse. And I was kind of hoping in the back of my mind, like, surely they're going to put us in a game lodge. And then, of course, they did, which was amazing. So instead of, like, paying $5,000 a night to actually stay there, they're paying you to stay there. It was ridiculous. It was amazing. It was a beautiful game lodge in Limpopo called the Baobab Private Nature Reserve. Just an unbelievable place. A spectacular time.
Okay. Limpopo, also some shots are here in Cape Town, my understanding is.
We were in a studio in Cape Town, yes.
Okay, we had some of the local city councillors there last night, very, very proud to be able to claim a little piece of this movie as having happened in Cape Town, so we'll give the credit where it's due. But I mean, how long were you shooting for? How long were you sort of immersed in that bushveld
city? It was about 2 months.
Oh, divine.
And about 90% of the crew come from Cape Town, so we got that. There you go.
Amazing.
For the councillors, just to make
and
a note.
I could hear that there were a lot of them in the audience last night at the premiere, and judging by the noises that they were making, they had a lot of fun working on this film.
Yeah, it was, you know, there's always two sides to it though. It's demanding. There was a period where everyone was camping out in the bush because they actually made a tented camp with something like 300 tents or something ridiculous that the crew had to stay in. And one night they had a big windstorm and a sort of sandstorm blew everything up. So there's always
Camping's
adventures
off, like that.
Off camera. I got charged down by a black rhino. There was like lots of fun things that happened off camera.
Not to mention what was happening on camera. Now, okay, the lions. Obviously, the lions are a huge part of this movie. It is, at its heart, a movie about those animals and their interaction with humans. And they almost steal the show. The fact that they are CGI will have surprised, I think, some people because it's done so well, Sholto. I was that first shot of you walking up and hugging a lion, and that literally happens in the film, by the way. I was looking at that thinking, okay, that can't be real, but it looks so real. that was CGI shot. I mean, what were or who were you actually hugging when that was being created?
Yes, I do think the lions and the younger kids upstaged me in the movie, by the way, just coming back to your intro intro sentence. I was basically looking at the worst version of a high school football mascot lion that you could imagine. It's a guy in a leotard, a gray leotard, which is all the rage now. I wore one when I was playing Chappie. Jason Cope, my buddy who played all the aliens in District 9, he wore them for the, you know, it's the same leotard thing. You guys will have seen it. You guys are film school students. You know what I'm talking about, the gray leotard with the tracking markers on it. But then he also had a big lion's head on it, on top of his head. With no, and it's also gray, no fur, and then two big gray paws. And then he's looking at me, I think it was through the mouth, through like a gauze through the mouth, and then trying to sort of go like, rawr, you know? And I was teasing him, stunt guy called Owen. They were making fun of him on Jimmy Fallon, actually. They brought up pictures in the back and actually showed what he looked like. It was pretty funny. And then you just need something to physically move against. And then the just genius CGI team just pulled off amazing.
It was
work.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I understand that your director was particularly careful about the way you interacted with the environment and making sure that the fact that you were shooting a reserve, you were really careful about not damaging any of the environment, to the point that he actually built a waterhole for you rather than using a real one. Is that true?
Yeah, and they pulled, you know, ramps over certain areas so that we didn't walk there, or, you know, there was definitely a lot of focus on it, certainly on not damaging anything that was serious. I mean, obviously you drive over the grass with like 50 trucks in certain areas, but it was very controlled where that was going to happen. On the reserve. Yeah, very, very much very conscious keeping, you know, protecting the environment. I mean, even one day I got to set, and as I'm walking, the guy's like, careful of the boomslang, boo. And I'm like, what? And I sort of look, and they told me very late, and it was just like sort of from about like over there. You know, I was here, and there's like a piece of tape, like caution tape over there, and then there's two boomslang, I don't know if they were mating or something, like over each other, like these green guys. And I was like, whoa, guys, that was like way closer than I was expecting to come to boomslang. So yeah, they didn't want to disrupt the boomslang, so we had to sort of go around them.
Shoot around them.
Yes.
Okay. Well,
yes.
He said he wanted to create a realistic African experience, so it sounds like
was.
That box was ticked.
Oh, it definitely was. Yeah.
So the million-dollar question, which about seven different people have asked, let's get to it. What's it like working with Idris Elba?
Man, it just, he's just damn good. He's just very, very good. It's a long time since I've had an experience like that. In fact, I'm not sure that it's, I certainly had, this one thing that happened was there's a scene with him where he's drunk. We've both had a bit to drink, but he's really drunk. And as we sat down and did the scene for the first time, I didn't know how he was going to play drunk. I'd never seen him do it. And suddenly he goes into this drunk guy. And I'm sitting there and I literally go out of character, which is rare for me. It doesn't happen a lot. And I'm like, this is an incredible drunk performance, you know. And then I remember, like, oh yeah, I have to say a line, you know. And then I come back to him. He had this sort of mesmerizing way and keeps things very relaxed. Also, like me though, likes to sort of change stuff up as well. Try and, you know, we would sort of mix takes up for each other, like change lines a little bit and play a bit, you know, keep like a playfulness.
Amazing experience. We've got another question from the audience. Again, I'll ask you just to introduce yourself. Welcome and pose your question.
Hi, Sholto. This is Tutuga. Hi. A quick question. What I'm hearing is we can get a top five survival tips from Sholto in the bush. that's what I'm curious about. How to survive in the bush.
Great.
Dude, you can't ask an actor that. You know what actors do? We sit with the phone and then it's like, I need someone. We had a helicopter available on standby to take us anywhere if anyone twisted an ankle. I mean, we had it because there were black mambas there, you know, and so then if you got bitten by something, you had it. But like, there was literally and it was a big helicopter as well. Do not ask an actor for like survival tips. Like, Kevin Richardson is like the real guy. Yep. Like, I pretend to be that guy. My advice is stay in the car, which I think is obvious advice for if you broke down, like what happened in this movie.
I was going to say, you quoted from the film extensively on
just
that one.
Just remain in the vehicle. Yeah, exactly.
And you know what happens when they leave the vehicle. And they still do it every time. We've got another student question. Welcome.
Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Gometa Tabo. So I have like a question of interest. You said you've worked behind the scenes before you were really looking into acting in front. So I wanted to understand like how was the transition like between behind the scene and being in front of the camera simultaneously. So
Yeah, the being in front of the camera as an actor was for me a way easier job. And it's not nearly as stressful as being, you know, like a director or producer. And it's more challenging on your personal life and on yourself and your sense of yourself and what it does to you to play characters as you start opening up different sides of yourself, and venturing into things and sort of pretend worlds that you wouldn't have normally. It's challenging, I guess, on your mental health in a certain way, more so than when you're a producer or director. So that was something that I noticed. It's not as fulfilling creatively for me, if I compare like writing and directing and producing, because in those behind the scenes capacities, if you're high up behind the scenes, certainly compared to directing, which I've done, directing is more creatively fulfilling because you have control of the final product more so than you do as an actor.
Okay, great. I have a second question. It's not a follow-up, it's just a different one. I just really loved when you said that described the way it was structured. It wasn't structured in an African way, and you had to come in and step in like, oh, we're South African, how do you do it? And I appreciate that. But now I have to ask, like, working in such an industry where it's like you have to subscribe to mostly appeal to the Western side, you know, in films, in terms of so that it could be played there, and working with talents like Idris Elba, it must be really stressful to have to stand up and have a voice of yourself to be like, I feel like this should be working this way because you trust the profession of the people around you. So now I want to understand, how do you compose yourself and keep a personality and keep your originality in a structured sense that you are working with talents that are actually thought to be bigger than you, and you're able to raise your voice and come up top and be structured in the sense that.
Yeah, I think it's really just about developing a respect amongst those people that you understand the language of storytelling and film and performance. Because, you know, if you take Hollywood as an industry, there's a lot of people from a lot of different nationalities that work in that environment. Yeah. The sets that I've been on have crazily different. I mean, I did a movie in Saudi Arabia last year where there was something like 44 different languages spoken on the set, you sure. know. It's but there's a common language of storytelling. There's a common language of performance that Hollywood has kind of mastered, if you will, in terms of like how to make it commercially palatable, how to make this particular story as dramatic as possible is kind of like in a Hollywood way. So it doesn't matter where you're from, like the fact that you're African or you come from Korea or you come from India or you come, if you're talking the same language in terms of this would be more dramatic, this is more, as an actor, for example, this is more humanly true to what actors would do, or this is what I would say, or this by offering this line instead of the line you have here. So for example, on this movie, like I made a suggestion that there wasn't in the script, there was the two Idris's two young daughters come into Africa, and they're very out of their depth, and they were in real life as well. They were scared of like bugs and, you know, frogs in the room. Actually, all the Americans were. It was bizarrely cliched. It was very funny. It was kind of every night at the campfire we would joke about how nervous they were of the wild, and in the script, and I said to the director, I said we should do something where they try and get on their phones, like as they arrive at my game reserve, because they would. Like, look at them. Absolutely. Like, in real life, they're sitting trying to get a signal right now. You know, now it doesn't matter what your status is. If you're high enough up that the director is actually listening to you, that's like an obvious thing then, you know, where it's like, well, that would be cool to have. We should have that. And no one's caring what your nationality is, or even if you were sort of lower down in the hierarchy and you made that suggestion, it'd be very difficult for anyone to ignore you. So that's how I would say is the way around that issue, is understand the craft.
Thanks for that. We've got another audience question. Welcome.
Hi, my name's Richard. I have only seen the trailer. I'm looking forward to the film, but I'm concerned that this film might do for lions what Jaws did for sharks.
You literally stole my next question, Richard.
It's a fair question if you just go on the trailer and there is an element of it that it's kind of like Jaws with a lion, and it kind of is kind of like that. But when you watch the film, what is very clear, it's very much on the side of lions, and that this lion that is a rogue lion that's attacking him and is doing it because of how humans have been treating the environment, essentially, specifically how they're treating lions in this case. So there's a real cognizance amongst us as well as the characters that humans have become the enemy. That we are the enemy now to these creatures, and sort of a recognition of that fact. So I don't think it'll have that result. I think hopefully that's clear enough, and I believe it is in terms of the result. You know, the responses that we've seen from people who've seen the movie.
I'm going to echo that. I thought the audience reaction last night, there was no small degree of, as much as it's a scary line and it's lots of jump scares and terrifying situations, there is an element of some sympathy.
I think that's what makes the fear in this movie so interesting is the technology is now there, which has never been before in the film history, of being able to make a photoreal CG lion coming after you. You've never seen that. You've seen dinosaurs and sharks and, you know, reptilian snakes. But a mammal like a lion is as Kevin Richardson says, you know, it's sort of like your house cat at home, but it's not. It's a fucking lion. It'll kill you. Sorry, I'm not allowed to swear. but it's and so when you're watching this big cat that's kind of like your cat trying to kill these humans and they kind of deserve it. It's sort of like a couple fighting. It's like the worst version of a spousal fight, you know. It's like, well, you sort of deserve it, dude, you know. And
told you not to leave the dishes
very
in the
interesting
sink.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic. It's closer to you than a T-Rex.
Yeah, I get you.
When you watch the lion, okay. And it's very, very scary creature.
And there are also some truly heroic lions in the film, for the record, as well. But we're not going to say too much more than that. We've got another question from the audience. Welcome. Yeah.
Good evening, Mr. Coakley. I just want to say I am like such a huge fan.
Oh, thank you.
Like I've been watching your movies for like over 10 years. When you walked through that door, I was internally screaming. And I just have got two questions for you. So I want to ask, like, my favorite movie of yours is Hardcore Henry.
Okay, wow, that's cool.
Yeah, and
I love that. That's like proper fanboy stuff.
Yeah, right. And I wanted to ask, like, how was it like filming for that? Because the whole movie's in like first person.
Yeah,
and even though technically you're not the main character, you're like the main source of dialogue that we get.
Yes,
and
I'm the main guy you see. Yes, yeah, yes, yeah. Yes.
And also you like, because of the situation of your character, you play like multiple characters. And then the second question being like, is there anything you can say about District 10?
Well, thank you. We had to ask.
Like, you know, the alien said 3 years, you know.
Yeah,
it's been significantly more.
Alien years work differently, as it turns out.
Nice cop out.
Who knew? So Hardcore Henry was crazy. Most challenging thing that I've done. It was the most challenging thing for the stunt crew as well, because every single stunt in that movie has to be shot from the one perspective, which is on the cameraman's head with the GoPro rig. If you know anything about film, the way you make an action sequence look good 9 out of 10 times is you have multiple cameras on it. If you ever watch like Tom Cruise or somebody fighting when they're behind the scenes and you look at the punches and stuff, it's kind of like, from the one angle. But it's when they cut it up and they're getting the right angles that it looks very powerful. So just to make stunts look amazing, fights look amazing from one camera perspective was mind-bogglingly hard for everybody involved. And it's just a grueling shoot to do. It was, you know, we were shooting in Moscow. And no one had ever done it to that extent before. So it was ridiculously pioneering and ambitious, which was fun. And then about District 10, you know, Neil keeps throwing me under the bus with this. He keeps going to the press and going like, we're doing it now. And everybody's like, whew. And then it's like 6 months later and it's like, where's that movie that Neil said you were going to do? So it's just like, he's not going to be listening to this, but maybe some of his family are here, and maybe you guys should just call him. And no, I just, hopefully in about a year and a half, you know, we had a draft. We'd sort of both written on some stuff. I did a draft, then Neil took it, then he's now got it, and he was sort of getting a version of that, what he wanted to make. And then some socio-political stuff was happening internationally in the world that he just felt the timing was maybe wrong and wanted to wait a little bit longer.
We're just saying we're ready for it, okay?
Okay.
Please, if you could.
All right, I'm going to be like Grandfather Vickers.
Hello, prawns, how's it going?
District 10, the third generation. Yeah. Okay.
Hello,
another
darlings.
Audience question. Welcome.
I love the nostalgia journey that we're going through, but you've just got a movie out, The Can Beast. I'm thinking of, what are you thinking about to do in the future? What are your passion projects? Do you have any roles you might want to join? Maybe the MCU? Do you fight John Wick? What's happening with you?
I'm actually going back to where to my roots of writing and directing. So I'm about to start my first movie that will take the next probably 2 years of my life. And I'm going to act and write and direct and star in it. It's if I don't die making it, it's just a crazy, crazy original project. And yeah, I just got to the point of just feeling like I wanted stuff with a bit more substance and meaning. And I feel like our industry's getting a little bit flat, if you will. You know, a lot of the time the movies just, there's not much art going on, commercialized art. I like commercial artistic movies. You got to push boundaries. You got to take some risks. There's very little of that happening at the moment. Like there's a big climate of fear amongst artists in Hollywood. You know, it feels like the town that I so admired is kind of scared of its own shadow.
Wow.
You know, you can't joke about things. You've got all this stuff with Dave Chappelle and all these different comedians, and it's just a very strange time. So I'm going to kind of step off a cliff and either like land face down or fly. I don't know, but it's not going to be a middle ground thing. So we'll see what happens.
All right, watch the space.
Yeah.
Okay, so suggestion in on the WhatsApp line from one of our listeners who would like to see you in a movie together with Charlize Theron and Arnold Fosler. You did something with Charlize or chasing
I did Gringo
after Charlize,
with Charlize.
Yes.
Yeah, I did Gringo with her, yeah. But yeah, we would like to do something together again because we didn't have scenes together in Gringo actually, so it didn't actually count.
Okay.
Yeah, when she convinced me to do that, I said, well, it's got to be like, we've got to do another one where we're actually doing scenes, you know?
Yep,
and she was
together,
like, yes,
camera.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so she better be listening. She owes me now.
An SMS in asking whether you ever see yourself winning an Oscar. And I'll add to that, if you do, would it be for behind the camera work or on camera?
You know, I have to be honest, like I've never been interested in the award side of our business. Like I would love my projects to do well commercially, but I've always felt a very strange feeling around like giving awards for what we do. Mm-hmm. And then of late, I just feel like the whole thing has become, I don't know, it's kind of irrelevant to me either way. You know, I think there's something, I mean, I guess egoically it would feel nice, but it isn't any sense of a measure of success for me personally, no.
You've spoken about the passion project you're busy with, writing, directing, intending to act, but sort of long term, a couple of people asking the same thing about, are there particular directors or actors that you aspire to work with? I mean, what would be your dream job in this industry?
Literally what I'm about to do now, just making my own stuff.
Yeah. Can you tell us any more about what it's about?
It's a project called Sapien Safari. It's basically all I'll tell you about it is it's a satirical science fiction social commentary movie. I play like an alien Steve Irwin naturalist, and Earth is a privately owned reserve owned by like a wealthy philanthropic alien. And I kind of deal with sapiens as a species, you know, and that's about as much as I'm going to give you.
Okay, can't wait. Can't wait to watch it when it's
very
ready.
Different.
In the meantime, though, we have Beast on circuit today in South Africa, a Universal Pictures movie, and Idris Elba, the co-star. We haven't mentioned the child co-stars too much, Ayana Halley and Leah Sava. Besides being scared of bugs and looking for Wi-Fi signal, I mean, they did a great job out there.
And upstaging me. That's the most important part you missed there. They were spectacular.
Yeah.
They were really special. Leah was like the sort of comedic, and I think she kind of steals the movie in her comedic moments. And both of them were just delightful to work with. And I don't know if you have kids anymore. I think like everybody grows up so fast that it's like I was expecting some sort of element of the fact that they were sort of young, or especially Leah, but she was just a consummate professional. Yeah, just they know their lines and marks, and they've been doing it since they were like four probably, you know. It was a pleasure. And they would sort of become very much like sisters because we were caught in these confined spaces for long periods of time. And then it would be like, can you not do that? You know, and it's like, what, am I chewing? Whatever. And you're just like, guys, come on. Are you chewing gum?
You sneezed the wrong way.
Yeah.
Sibling stuff. I mean, speaking of kids.
But they loved each other. Like it was that sort of real sibling kind of vibe. It was quite amazing to see happen, actually.
Before we run out of time, I'm thinking of your own daughter, 5 years old. Is this a life you'd wish for her? Would you love to see her follow in your footsteps?
Oh, Lord. I mean, probably not, although she's showing signs of it already. You know, she does voices and, you know, does these, like, you know, she can do the difference between like a melodramatic performance and a real one. Like, she'll be like, I'm gonna miss you, Dada, you know, and then she'll do it like for real, like, Dada, I'm really gonna miss you when you go, you know. I'm like, wait, are you real? Is this real now? Is this real? So she's gonna be a phenomenal liar, which is terrible. I'm trying to instill the value of truth. I'm like, just trying to make sure that we have this like truth thing between dad and daughter, you know. So we'll see how that goes. You know, if it's what she wants to do, you can't. I'll never stop her and stand in her way, and I'll help her as much as I can. But if she'd rather go and work for, you know, SpaceX, I'd also be totally cool with that.
Especially with the retirement plan. Sholto, I mean, the clock has run away from us. I wanted to say a huge thank you to you for making such a generous chunk of your time available today, because I know you are in demand after the premiere last night. It's been a joy having you with us in studio. And congratulations on the film. It's a roller coaster ride. It's great, great fun. Congrats to you and all of the teams, especially the South African crew involved in making it. And great to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. And thanks for the studio audience, guys.
Yeah, that extends to our audience.
That's the first time I've ever
well.
Seen that.
It's
thanks
been
for coming
awesome.
By, guys.
Thank you for some great questions. Really great to have you with us here. The movie is Beast. It opens on circuit today. Enjoy, everybody.